Thank you very much. Good morning to everybody. Thanks for joining us for the Q1 update on the Lenzing results. I'm here with Thomas Obendrauf, our CFO, Robert van de Kerkhof, our Chief Commercial Officer and Investor Relations Communication. Thanks for joining. I'm happy to report that the first quarter of 2016 continued the positive trends that we, I think, could observe within the group, also in the second half of last year. I think, take already the main message up front, I think a very solid set of numbers. We had a very strong start into the year, pretty much across the front of our products. We had solid demand, both in specialties as well as on viscose products. As a consequence, we just saw very solid organic growth in the first quarter. In the fiber business, our main business, we were close to 15%, 14.6% of revenue growth. Primarily, it was pricing and volume. Group revenue grew by 8.1%. Now, please bear in mind, this is not a full like-for-like comparison because many of the divestitures that we did in the course of 2015 happened in the second and third quarter. Mentally, you need to take those out. The core business was growing well in the double digit. EBITDA up by 54.7% versus Q1 2015. Very solid. Very pleased with that. What we saw specifically is that our specialty strategy continues to bear fruits. High price resilience. We saw also in the first quarter when viscose was in part going down, later back up, we were seeing a solid and steady increase of prices, and we're very pleased with the pricing power we could display on our specialty products. EBITDA margin for the quarter, very pleased with 18% compared to 12.6% a year ago. Now, more administratively, because we mentioned this already in our full year result announcement that we would ask for approval now on April 20th, the AGM gave approval for the doubling of our dividend from 1 to 2 euro per share. Now, if you look where do we stand on this Core 10 implementations, Core 10, our core strategy. Now, number one is on one of the big features of strengthening the core, we committed to a 50 million EBITDA improvement program effective 2017, the full 50 million, with the run rate of 50 million to be accomplished by the end of 2016. We can report that we are very well on our way. We make big progress on the commercial front, also on operational excellence, and I think we are very confident that we will accomplish this commitment of the run rate by 2016, with the majority of the load already accomplished earlier than that. Also on the asset strategy, specifically on expanding our specialty portfolio, specialty capacities, we make good progress. It's a big decision. We speak of substantial moves for us there, and we will take another couple of months to look at that, and in Q3 2016, we will announce what we will do in this context exactly. Very important for us, and that is something that took up quite some also management attention in the last four or five months, was the new organization implementation. We discussed this also at the Capital Markets Day, for those of you who were there, that we want to move closer to our customers, to show more customer intimacy, to take more decisions locally. As a consequence, we moved to an organizational design that is much more a regional functional matrix with a lot of decision power in the regions. We have now three senior VPs in the regions. We have three P&L entities in North Asia, Middle East, Africa, as well as Europe and Americas. We sit now in an executive committee with eight people, six nationalities. I think really a good global representation with nationalities ranging from India, China, U.K., Germany, Holland, and so on. Now, looking at the market. Supply and demand was clearly better in balance than the same period last year. Also what we did see is that the capacities that were taken out in Q3, Q4 of last year, where we already said in all the last calls they will come back, they did come back. And as a consequence, we saw in the beginning of the quarter, and already in December of last year, quite some downward trend on viscose pricing. Now that, however, started after Chinese New Year to come back, and we are looking again today at the market with good operating rates across the industry, and that there is at least no major capacity additions currently in the pipeline. Now, viscose pricing in the course of the quarter went up by almost 9% between January and March. Now, Robert will speak later on about pricing. In the meanwhile, we saw again some softening of the market, but overall, I think it is a reflection of the more stable supply and demand balance, and also the fact that compared to what we did see in 2014, beginning 2015, that the inventory levels still remain low. On a quarter-on-quarter comparison, Q1 2015 versus average 2016, prices for viscose, and this is market prices, are up 13.6%. Other important feature, average dissolved wood pulp prices went up, however, only by about 5% versus the same period of last year, and we are now sailing around the $850 per ton. That's in summary, and let me now hand over to Robert, who will give you some further insight into market and some of our marketing initiatives. Robert.
Thank you very much, Stefan. Good morning to everybody. Yeah, the market stayed quite turbulent, as Stefan mentioned. We've seen a recovery of the viscose prices already a little bit before Chinese New Year. This continued after the Chinese New Year. And this was driven by good utilization rates, by very good demand of viscose, and a very balanced inventory of the viscose prices. So where we are today is a quite stable situation with 10 days of inventories of viscose in China that is on the lower side even, but it's quite healthy for the overall supply to the market. This is in context of an ongoing very low polyester pricing. Now, this is a situation that we've been seeing now for almost the whole of 2015 and again in 2016, so this we do not expect will have a significant impact on the market. But of course, in certain areas like nonwovens, this prevents us from going up in prices for these more technical applications. Cotton is also a very dynamic market at this moment. The cotton prices have gone up, dropped a bit, is going up again a little bit. Overall, compared to last year, the cotton prices came down from about the 69 cents US dollar cents per pound in Q1 15 to the 65 cents in the first quarter this year. The Chinese government has, however, announced that as of May 2016, they plan to sell an additional 2 million tons of cotton reserves. Now, last year, we remember they sold about 1 million tons. That was the plan. They did an auction, which was not very popular. It was very difficult for them to sell these volumes. So we'll need to see to what extent they're going to be successful and at what prices they will sell these volumes. But we will see an increase of about 10% of cotton coming into the market in 2016, as of the second half of 2016. So this is something that will have an impact on the market, but difficult to predict what impact it will have. As you can see on the top right chart, we will have an ongoing reduction of the ending stocks. This has been coming down from the 22 million tons to an expected 20 this year, and a further decrease next year. This is really long-term a very healthy sign for our industry, because this means that the market is going to be balanced again on all the key raw materials, cotton, viscose, and a steady situation, oversupply situation in polyester. Downstream, the market for cotton, however, is slowing down a little bit, again making it more difficult for the Chinese government to sell the 2 million tons. It is slowing down a little bit because the Chinese textile industry becomes a little bit less competitive with ongoing increases in salary costs as well as in labor costs. So there is going to be much more growth, and we're seeing that outside China than inside China. This might also be one of the reasons why the Chinese government is now going with a 2 million ton reduction in their cotton stocks. If you then take all this, the overall market therefore really still supports our strategy. The mega trends that we have been announcing during our Capital Markets Day continues to increase. People are looking for higher value products. The specialty fibers demand is driven by an ongoing need to differentiate at the brand and retail level. China remains still the growth engine, despite then the less competitiveness on a spinner level. We see more demand also for differentiation and higher value products inside China, but also despite the current difficult market situations in China, the demand for consumer products is still quite strong. Mm-hmm. The revenue share of our specialty increased to the 41.7% in Q1 versus the end of 2015, 40.5%. Now, this is partially due to an ongoing demand of our specialty fibers, Tencel, Lenzing Modal, and, of course, Lenzing Viscose. The specialty fibers of Lenzing Viscose, not the standard commodity textile, but also to some extent by a reduction in some of the other businesses that we have. But overall, we feel very well on track to achieve the 50% of our specialty share by 2020. Our innovation pipeline and the whole downstream partnerships are products that we will be bringing to the market in the next 2 to 3 years and partnering with key influencers in the value chain, be it weavers or even down to brands and retailers, made a lot of progress, signing some interesting agreements that will last for a few years to really get a maximum value of these innovations. Really exciting future for our innovation efforts. On the next slide, we have highlighted a little bit. We got some questions about what exactly do you mean with specialties? What does it mean that you want to grow specialties? And I just really want to spend just one slide on precising that a little bit with the Tencel example. So first, overall, our specialty strategy, as we communicate during the Capital Market Day, contains Tencel Modal, which remains a very niche, high specialty product, mainly for close to the body applications, and then some specialty viscose applications. So on this slide, I really would like to highlight a little bit on what exactly are we going to do to have a long-term positioning of Tencel as a specialty fiber. Overall, it completely capitalizes on the mega trends like sustainability, as we mentioned during the Capital Markets Day. It is providing also functionality and aesthetics, which is really very critical for the consumer demand. We're strengthening our core markets. Where do we create value right now? These are markets like denim and home and interiors. We made significant progress there after the start of the Jumbo line in 2014. And this is also an area where we continue to grow globally in these kind of core applications. However, we're also looking at some new applications in much more technical segment. Now, this takes much longer. These are applications where we need to really have a good value proposition, where there are a lot of specifications to meet, and where a qualification is required to get in. These are some footwear applications. We managed the Botanic Shoe concept last year, but also agrotextiles, mobility, filtration. Some of these will be very niche, but very high value. Some of them will take several years to get into. So again, a pipeline of innovation, but not product innovation, but application innovation. If you look at the unique selling proposition of Tencel in textiles, where do we really drive our value in textiles? Well, first, Tencel is the perfect fiber to blend with commodities, but also with the noble fibers. The fact that now the Chinese government is going to sell off cotton, there's going to be some lower cotton. People blend in then Tencel with this cotton to make a poor quality cotton run very smooth in their machine and give a yarn that is going to be high quality. That would be the blending in with the commodities. But it's also an excellent fiber on the more premium products, so like silk, extra long staple cotton, or like we announced with the Woolmark company last year, a perfect blend with merino wool. We're really creating the high-performing, aesthetical, emotional aspects of a product in a cost-effective way, because this really what drives these kind of applications. The processability of our value chain is really critical. It was something that is not easy to do. If you have a brand new fiber category like Tencel coming in the market, the spinners first need to get used to it. The weavers, the knitters, they need to get used to it. They need to learn how to process this. Dyeing and finishing, the whole value chains need to be trained. So there's a lot of effort from our technical customer service people in the last 2 years to really drive these technical capability throughout the value chain. And by doing that, we've really developed also special partnerships at each step of this value chain. And these partners is a focus area for us that will help us to grow our specialties further in the future. So we'd be very selective that we pick the right partners in the industry that we will help to improve the processability of Tencel, but that will help us to create and capture the value that our fibers are offering. So this is really our key to success for the healthy innovation pipeline I mentioned before. The unique selling proposition for non-wovens and technical textiles is completely different. It's less aesthetics, it's less emotional, but here really what counts is top quality, very consistent, uniformity. Whatever they produce, it has to be very consistent. So functionality, such as moisture management, high tenacity, the strength of the fiber, thermal stability, these are some examples of what these applications really require. They significantly vary from application to application, but this is where our technical sales team, the new business development team that we have in place, are extremely well in understanding these needs and capturing these values. It's a very technical sales that these people are doing. A good example is the flame resistant properties of our Lensing FR, but also we have some Tencel variations that are coming into the market. They are partially still under development, partially they are being already applied at small scale for some workwear filtration applications. Also what is being developed by this diverse group is a whole range of specialty fibers. This is not a kind of a standard product that is being sold, because each application has a unique value proposition, but this is a quite complex SKU portfolio, where each product needs to meet a specific application. Some might be coarser yarn, some might be finer yarn, some will be longer, some will be shorter, like the shortcut fibers. Those are the kind of specialties that we are very well able to produce in specialty assets, such as Mobile in the US, Grimsby in the UK, or Heiligenkreuz. So very niche, but high-value applications. And with that, I would like to hand over to Thomas for all the financial details.
Thank you, Robert. Hello and welcome also from my side. Let me briefly guide you through the most important financial numbers of Q1 2016. Revenues came in with 512 million euro compared to 474 in the same period of the year before. This is an 8% increase, but as already mentioned by Stefan, on a like-for-like basis, actually we saw double-digit growth. The growth is mostly coming from higher prices, but also to a certain extent from higher volume. Let me also highlight the share of specialty fibers. This one came in with 41.7%, which compares to 40.5% for fiscal year 2015. Moving on to the earnings numbers, actually, EBITDA made a significant jump from 60 million to 92 million, which is an increase by 54%. This is, of course, in line with higher revenues. EBITDA margin made an improvement of more than 5 percentage points from 12.6 to 18%. EBIT margin jumped also by almost 6% from 5.7 to 11.6, and EBIT number came in with close to 60 million compared to 27 in the year before. Moving on to earnings per share and dividend and net profit. Actually, net bottom line, we saw a net profit of 44 million euro compared to 16 million in the year before. And in terms of earnings per share, we actually saw an improvement by almost by 1 euro from 66 euro cents to 1 euro 63. Dividend, as already mentioned by Stefan, the AGM approved a dividend of 2 euro, which represents a dividend yield of 2.9%. Moving on to the next slide, Just a few things I would like to highlight on the balance sheet. Actually, equity ratio increased by 1%, which is of course in line with the higher result. But of course, there was also some translation difference, which reduced equity accordingly. And net debt basically came in with 242 million compared to 328 million by end of 2015. Last but not least, a few words on the cash flow. Actually, all the cash flows improved significantly, be it gross cash flow, be it operating cash flow or free cash flow. The operating cash flow, of course, was driven by a higher result, but also by the fact that the trading working capital was lower than by the end of the year. And as our investments are still on a quite low level, we ended up with a significantly higher free cash flow amounting to 88 million euro. And with this, I hand back to Stefan.
Now, you know, if you look a little bit in the famous crystal ball and see how 2016 might look like, now we pretty much reiterate the outlook guidance that we gave at the announcement of the full year results. But I would summarize it like that we have not seen any major changes on the outside world. Now, the macroeconomic indicators remain to be very volatile. I think we are a bit less affected by some of the question mark in China than many other industries, because we see local demand to be reasonably strong. And I think in many of the high growth economies, our kind of products are being consumed. Now, that's positive. And secondly, that the overall supply and demand remains positive. So if we don't see anything major on the currencies or a sudden drop in polyester or cotton prices, which we have seen in the past, can happen, then we reiterate our guidance, probably even with more conviction than we did a quarter ago, and say earnings 2016 will be substantially better than 2015. Now, with that, I would like to finish our presentation and open the floor for questions. Operator, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star followed by one. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star followed by two. If you are using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selections. Anyone who has a question may press star followed by one at this time. Please limit yourself to two questions only so that everyone has a chance to ask a question. Should there be time left, we can start a second Q&A session. And one moment for the first question, please. First question is from the line of Matthias Pfeifenberger of Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning, Stephanie, gents. Congrats on the results. A couple of questions. Firstly, on Q1, what has been this volume tailwind? Can you quantify that maybe in top-line growth or so? You were building quite some working capital in Q4 and obviously selling it off with good pricing and volumes. And also, was there some funnies like provision releases? I've seen you've discontinued your segment reporting on the results basis, so maybe you could tell us the results on consolidation and technique. Was there some provision releases from maybe lower than expected staff cuts or so? And then also with regards to the rest of the year, maybe you can give us a Q2 guidance. You've, I think, discontinued to do that. And why are you not raising full year guidance? You have the 50 million from the mix effect that will accrue by majority this year already. You have a very strong Q1. So what's holding you back? Is that maybe a bit related to the cotton auction? Maybe to a question for Mr. van der Kerkhoff, is that obviously going to drive cotton prices lower? Is there a risk of viscose coming down a bit? So what's the views there? Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Pfeifenberger. I will take the general tailwind discussion as well as the Q2 guidance. I will then ask Robert maybe to comment on cotton, and Thomas will speak about the provision releases. We did have some tailwind in Q1 in part because We did see both on, you know, operating rates in our units still that we could make improvements also in our specialty production. So that is one. And indeed, I think what we did see is, again, we ended up with relatively low inventory at the end of the year. Now, volume growth will continue to be one of our challenges, given the good utilization rates that we have in the system. Now, with respect to Q2 guidance, we guided last time that we, you know, we feel very comfortable that we would, you know, or that we are targeting 2012 results, and I think our confidence hasn't come down. But we have seen in this business that, you know, this is not just a stable growth business, and, you know, there are quite some possibilities for sudden changes. And I think what we would like to do is to continuously, you know, let's say, deliver on what we say rather than to explain every quarter why we have not. Yeah. Now, Robert, maybe some words on the cotton option.
Yeah, thanks, Stefan. So, indeed, on cotton, it is a big question mark. Last year, the 1 million ton reduction was being auctioned at the same price level as cotton was at that time in the market, and it was very difficult for the Chinese. We do not know how this will be done this year. How will the Chinese try to now push 2 million tons as of May in the market? So right now it's still the same philosophy as last year, but if the demand is weak, then they could decide to drop prices, and then indeed you'll see an increase in cotton at lower prices. How will this impact our business is difficult to predict. It's not easy for a spinner to change now a viscose spinning asset to a cotton asset. That is not easy, but there's still some cotton spinning capability available in the market. So indeed, the overall demand further down in the value chain could have an impact. Will this impact the viscose prices? It depends on the speed. Again, sometimes some value chains, if you look at the very fast retailers, they go extremely quick. There will be a change to be seen very, very rapidly. Some of them are a little bit slower. This will just take time. But it is, viscose is supply demand. An increase in cotton supply could reduce a little bit the demand for viscose fabric or viscose blends. And therefore, there will be a shift in supply demand. And this could therefore have an impact on pricing. So, yes, it is a question mark on the 2016 wood-based fibers.
Okay, let me address the question you raised on lensing technique. First of all, let me start with another topic. You mentioned the short quarterly report. Of course, we shortened it compared to the last year, but this is, of course, in line with the new rules and regulations. On the provision on lensing technique, there's definitely nothing major to report under this heading. There was no major provision releases, so there is no impact from this side.
Okay, so we won't get segment results for the quarters from now on.
That is true. Yes. Only for a half year. Yes. We will shorten the quarterly report for Q1 and Q3. There will be a more extensive one for the half year, and then of course for the full year.
Okay. Thanks.
Next question is from the line of Stefan Trubrich of Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon. Good morning, Stephanie. Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my question. Also, congratulations from my side. Excellent set of results. Maybe a quick follow-up to the cotton issue in China and the announced disposal plans of the Chinese reserve. You said that Tencel would be well positioned as a blending partner, and I mean, given the fact that they are selling 2 million, how much of a blending partner would Tencel be? Would it be 10%? I mean, this would already exceed your installed capacity. And don't you think that if the announcement of the sale is in the market, that this is already reflected in the cotton future? More coming back to Tencel, you said volume growth. You announced in the release that in Q3 you will provide us with more details on the Tencel expansion, where this will happen. Could you remind us, please, of the lead time, how long it could take until the new capacity comes on stream, and if you have in your forecast already incremental Tencel volumes in 2018, and also looking at the slide back, you already showed that in the full year results, but you seem to get in 2016 9,000 tons incremental Tencel volumes. Could you give us maybe an update on that, when this can happen? And the last question is on the operating cash flow, which has been very strong in the first quarter with plus 100 million. Can you give us an idea over the coming quarters? I mean, obviously, depending on the underlying result, but do you still see improvement potential in the working capital? And would it be fair to assume that we can take at least the Q1 operating cash flow times 3 or 3.5 times for the full year? Thank you.
Okay, I will start with the Tencel volume growth, and then Robert on cotton China and operating cash flow by Thomas. Now, we are looking at the total asset footprint, how we want to develop our specialty fiber portfolio, and that is not just Tencel, that also affects viscose, also modal. Now, in terms of lead times, from the moment where you announce a completely new plant. Now, that is something, you know, give or take 2 years and a quarter. Highly dependent, and I want to stress this, where you build it and what permits are already in place and so on. So that is one. We have a whole range of different options in our portfolio that we are evaluating, ranging from smaller to bigger debottleneckings, to full-fledged brownfield options, but also to greenfield options. And that is why we want to take also the time to stage that, because I think the balance, again, will be how do we react to this, I think, increasing pull for our fibers and balance in the, you know, financial capability, implementing capability, as well what the market in the end wants to see from us. Now, I will not go into any details now how much capacity exactly comes when. Now, we will give more color to that in the third quarter. And I think you anyhow know reasonably well, judging by your excellent report, by the way, what we're doing. So I think you need to be patient with me until we release that. Now,
just let me interrupt, but could you, like, if you would have a vision, would you see incremental volumes already being sold in 2018 from the expansion?
I have a vision, and asking once more the same question, I will not answer it any more specifically, but you will get an answer in due course.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, on the cotton side, the two key drivers when you have a low cotton price, one is the cotton valuing up. So you take a cheap cotton and then you value it up with Tencel. The performance gets better, it's fine. The problem with that, of course, is that you then get, if the cotton prices would drop further, depending on the sale of the Chinese stock, this will take away some growth momentum of the higher value Tencel application, so in more of the premium, because you get a fairly good cotton fiber that is going to be cheaper. So there will, short term, be a shift from certain fabric blends to a more cotton-based blend that is valued up. So overall, we will be the Tencel demand will be strong, but there will be a segment shift in the sales portfolio. So this is what we expect short term. Longer term, however, you know, as I said earlier, this reduction in high stock levels in China at a fairly rapid level, as you can see now, 2 million tons in China, will have an impact on the overall fiber blend mix in the market, and will really help the wood-based fiber, specifically Tencel, which is an extremely good mix with the various cotton and cotton applications.
Yeah, but it still depends if they are able to sell the cotton. I mean, this is just their plan.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, that's why it is just really difficult to say what will happen in 2016. It is a question mark.
Okay, and maybe just on the Tencel debottlenecking in 2016 that is shown in your slide pack, could you give us just a reference when we can expect this volume will be in the second half of the year? Can it be the full 9,000 tons, or is this just on an annualized basis?
This is on an annualized basis.
Okay.
This is on an annualized basis, and you will see some of that in the second half of this year.
Okay, then addressing the question you raised on the cash flow, I will still let you do the math, but what I can tell you is that, of course, gross cash flow should increase in line with the better result. And regarding the working capital, what I can tell you is that with the current level of working capital, we are definitely not happy. We hopefully see some improvements also this year. In any case, we should be better than last year, of course.
Okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Next question comes from the line of Bernd Maurer of RCB. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning. I want to follow up to the questions of inter-fiber competition. And if I remember from the lunch we hosted with you in March and also the conference call following the full year 15 results, you stated as a risk the inter-fiber competition and that we should be aware of that the collections have some time lag to the price developments. Did you see here in the last 2-3 months any uptake of collection changes which would be a negative for the viscose-based part of the collections? That's point one. Our second question, I'm positively surprised how positively your average prices must have held up in Q1, and I would have expected a stronger or a more negative impact of the weakening viscose prices end of 2015, beginning of 2016. I think to fully understand your specialty focus and the impact the higher share of specialty fibers has on your prices. What did something also change for a standard viscose portion, as it's still the majority of your fibers? Could you take out here some price and sensitivity?
Thank you, Bernd. I think, yeah, indeed. Overall, there is definitely this lag with special fibers. We do not see yet that our better price has a negative impact on us. Now, then, when you look at our portfolio, this is the key reason, of course, for it. The standard viscose prices pretty much follow the CCF prices that we publish. Now, when I say pretty much followers, we've been able to reestablish a premium over CCF. So all the fibers that we're currently selling are above the CCF standard because of better service and better quality levels. And as Stefan mentioned, this is also something we expect with the new organization being much closer to the customer, also being with regional decision-making, much closer to the markets to have a much better pricing ability. So we are just able in each local market to react quicker to the local opportunities.
Which also has a positive impact on the standard viscose products and not only relates to specialties.
Absolutely. This is just the overall, when we're talking about the whole commercial excellence where we've made a commitment, this is just to be much better in your pricing ability. So how do you track a waterfall of price erosion. You have a gross invoice price, you know, what in the end you end up in your pocket. All this discipline is part of this whole 50 million excellence. Mm-hmm. How quick can you react to the market is all part of the 50 million. So this is a commercial discipline that has been significantly improved with processes, with systems, and with the organization. So this will have an impact on all the fibers we are making. Now, it also will have an impact, of course, on which fibers end up in which end use, that you are able to move from certain lower value applications to the higher value applications. Now, this we've not seen yet in viscose because this will take time. If you want to push a product like viscose black, we are shifting some production from standard viscose white to viscose black, which we started end of last year. This is a process that takes time because it really needs to be qualified, tested at customers. This takes time. So we will not have the first big changes because of, let's say, the higher viscose mix from standard to specialties. On the tensile, however, yeah, there we've been able to react very quick. We started this initiative also earlier. We definitely have been able to shift certain volumes in, for instance, from non-wovens to textiles, to higher value textile applications. We've also been able, with understanding the true value in use, the partnership I was referring to see the first progress on making sure that we find the right applications plus the right partners that pay us the good prices. Mm-hmm. So we have been able to decouple the commodity price setting of viscose from the specialty applications, and we are now pricing really for the value that the product is bringing in the specific application. And this has resulted in a much better pricing discipline and as a consequent result for the first quarter.
Thank you very much for this.
Next question is from the line of Sebastian Bray of Berenberg. Please go ahead.
Good morning and congratulations on your results. I had two questions. So firstly, on the margin expansion that you had at the EBITDA level on a year-on-year basis from 12.6 to 18%, obviously there's a lot of pricing drop through here, but could you perhaps give me a feel of how the improvement breaks down between pricing improvement, improved utilization, increasing proportion of higher value specialties? And secondly, on capacity, what kind of capacity expansions can you expect from debottlenecking as an interim measure? And is this not only limited to Tencel, but also includes modal and viscose specialties? And just also on the theme of capacity expansions, does this announcement in Q3 2016 also cover the potential to increase backward integration through wood pulp? Thank you.
Okay. I will ask Thomas to address the margin expansion, even though I think the details that we will provide there will be not very high. In terms of capacity expansions, we will not speak today about the details. You're right, Sebastian, there are, you know, opportunities for debottlenecking, and it is not just in Tencel, but also in specialty viscose as well as in modal, even though our focus in Q3 will be on Tencel. Now, with respect to dissolved wood pulp, we are also making good progress in our investigations there. I don't see us in Q3 being ready for an announcement there. That is something that's also the way we, I think, have informed end of last year, that this will probably take us until the end of this year. And we will not be bogged down by a week or a month or even a quarter, because in all options there, we speak really substantial, you know, investment and commitments. So in terms of sequence, Q3 we will give much more, I think, transparency in terms of capacity additions and timings on our specialty fibers, and then expect towards the end of the year, maybe early Q1 of next year, that we come with how we want to address our pulp challenges. Thomas, on the margin?
On the margin expansion, actually, already mentioned from my side, the biggest portion, of course, is coming from higher prices, and only a smaller portion is coming from higher volume. I think there is not much more we are willing to tell you at this point in time.
That's helpful, thank you. Just as a quick follow-up, it's been mentioned actually by one of my colleagues that the silk prices are up quite considerably this year. Is this something which Tencel is benefiting from because people substitute out more expensive silk for Tencel? Or?
No, silk is still an extremely niche market. There's indeed some volume in it, but it's definitely not meaningful compared to the volumes. The premium silk market is at this moment still a 100% silk market.
Thank you.
Next question is from the line of Christian Weitz of Baader Bank. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello everybody. Also from my side, congrats to the really very good numbers. You mentioned several times that like-for-like would have been double-digit. And could you possibly give us there a feel how much this was, number one? And number two, also give us maybe a bit more of a feel, volume versus price. And possibly, as you did in the past, give us the absolute volume you have been producing. And then with regards to CapEx, you mentioned in your report that the expense for capacity expansion was relatively low in the first quarter, but will go up. If I remember right, you guided 150 million at the Capital Markets Day. Is that still the number we should look at? And these are basically my two questions.
Now, in terms of volume versus price, it was the majority was price. We, you know, compared to the past, we want to stay away from too detailed information, including the volume. With respect to CapEx, the first quarter was clearly not something that you know is in line with our expansions. It has also something to do with yet getting ready. The medium term, we have said that the 200 million-ish is a good sort of yardstick. For this year, we will not make the 200. However, we have also said that what we have done last year, being close to 70, is also not what you should expect. So we will have quite a ramp-up of CapEx towards the second half of the year. So if you take something that is solidly somewhere between the two numbers, I think you will be, for this year, well off. Now, again, please bear in mind that what we're saying CapEx is on average. We could have years, again, that we will also, go up, and be beyond the 200, and in others we will be below. But currently we are planning for a CapEx ramp up, also given our capital allocation priorities. This is number one for capital allocation.
Okay, and still, could you possibly provide us with an absolute, how many tons you've been producing in the entire of 2015 as well as for the first quarter?
No, again, we would like to stay away from that for one simple reason. We are seen today as the market leader. It is very transparent for our competition. What is our nameplate capacities? And just by providing those details on a quarterly basis, we are sending a signal that I think goes beyond what we feel comfortable actually sending. Now, we have very good utilization rate. As I already indicated, our volume growth is something that, is actually our capability to grow volume is not great at the moment. And as a consequence, also the capacity expansion program.
Okay, thanks.
Next question is from the line of Paul de Thierry of Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Morning, Stefan, and congratulations on the results. Can I just touch on Tencel? You have a very, very dominant market share. Just looking ahead, how much is the adoption of Tencel constrained by the fact there is only a single global supplier, and how does that affect the potential demand for your products with the very big potential consumers of the fiber?
I think it's a very good point, Paul. We are today in the market, north of 90% market share. Now that will come down. We do see signs in Asia that competition is getting more into this market, and we don't expect that this will be a fundamental growth impediment for us. Now, with Tencel being such an interesting blend partner for cotton, however, what we do see is the potential fantasy of how big Tencel might become is something that is quite substantial. So that is also something that is, I think, in this whole risk-reward scenario for, you know, for capacity expansion, something that is, for us, I think, a big strategic consideration. Short-term, I don't see this being, you know, of an issue. Medium-term, we will have competition.
And then just maybe two further questions, if I may. Focusing on Tencel, I mean, you talked about the cotton price and the Chinese now looking to sell a much bigger volume this year, and that might drive down the price overall of cotton. But isn't it fair to say that there is a big difference between the cotton that the Chinese have in storage in terms of quality and the cotton that you can buy on the open market that's relatively fresh? So will we not see maybe a two-tier cotton price? And therefore, will that necessarily won't be such a problem for Tencel demand?
You're right, Paul. That's what we do see already, that if lower quality cotton is being sold off, that comes at a different price point. And you have in the whole cotton world a whole range of different price points, you know, dependent on quality. And clearly, the inventory that comes from China is trading at a discount. That is not necessarily, you know, bad for Tencel, yeah. But overall, yeah, even if there is a lower segment, you know, in cotton that takes share, it somewhat is a drag on the overall cotton community. And low cotton prices are overall not good for our business, and high cotton prices are. So, but the dynamic you describe are very fair.
And then finally, just on your backward integration, vertical integration, obviously with DWP, and you want to grow that, I think, from the current 50% to 70-75% by 2020. Just explain in these markets with textile growth running at, say, 3-4%, how much of an advantage is it to produce your own dissolved wood pulp or grow your own raw material in terms of getting the quality of the final yarn at an acceptable level for the major textile manufacturers and ultimately the retailers?
There are three advantages. The first one has something to do with our brand and sustainability. It's very important that we understand where every tree comes from, where does the pulp come from, because that's one of our positionings in the market of our brand, that we want to be at all moments sort of a sustainability leader. That's one. Secondly, what you don't have in your cellulose, you cannot get into your fiber. So it's almost like winemaking. If you somewhat, you know, just buy grapes, there is a limit. Yeah. So we feel that by being in control of our, you know, a higher share of dissolved wood pulp, it supports our quality strategy. And number three is this business goes through, and even if you have more specialty character, there is an underlying supply and demand game, and it is important that you manage a bigger part of the total value chain. That gives you an offensive but also a defensive war chest. And last but not least, if you manage then on top to have dissolved wood pulp and fiber on the same site, that gives integration advantages.
Great. Thank you.
Next question is from the line of Gunther Eick of Eick Trade International. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the call. My question is about the specialties. I think you spoke also about the brands, and you will have filed a lot of patents for these things. And second question is about footwear. Are you delivering footwear products to the shoe industry, or Are you building schools totally like in Czechia, as Baťa 100 years ago started with these things? Thank you.
Okay. I will ask Robert to maybe address both of these questions.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for the question. So on the brand, yes, we do have and continue to really drive our brand position. As Stefan mentioned, specifically the Tencel brand is extremely well positioned from a sustainability perspective. That's what is recognized. And this is also something that you'll see in some of the sustainability reports of the big brand and retailers that are actually referring to our brand. So this is an asset that we have. Also, the Lenzing brand itself, the Lenzing brand opens all the doors in the world. That's a very unique position that we have. If Lenzing comes with a new innovation, you go to the industry, the doors will open and people will listen to us. And this is, for instance, a specific advance we're using in the footwear concept. Last year, we developed internally from a pure technical perspective the idea of where could Tencel in various forms be used in footwear. And we are working there with partners. It's still a raw material supply. We're not making and not planning to make our own footwear at this moment. But, for instance, at this moment, there are shoelaces made out of 100% Tencel with a company in Austria. There are soles, rubber soles, where Tencel powder is integrated in because it significantly improves the slip resistance of a sole on wet surfaces. There is a very popular American shoe brand that is using Tencel in the top layer, and also one of the biggest Swedish brands at this moment is launching footwear again with Tencel cotton blends in fabrics for the footwear. So it's really driving new applications, but still with raw materials for the industry.
Thank you.
There are no further questions at this time. I would like to hand back to Stefan Dubowski for any closing comments.
Yeah, I think that finalizes our session updating you on our Q1 results. I think overall a very positive start into the year. Thank you for your interest and your support of our group, and looking forward to being in contact with you again for the Q2 announcements. Thank you very much. Goodbye.